is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
With Malcolm Hohenlein, my colleague and friend. Malcolm is with the Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, watching very carefully the tragedy at Columbia University. We welcome a professor from Columbia University, the Columbia Business School. He's in the management division, Shai Davidai, an assistant professor. And we learn from Shai that Columbia has been in turmoil for weeks. And it's important to understand this turmoil turns around something that my 50 years on the Upper West Side was never part of the conversation, which is blunt anti-Semitism being practiced out in the open repeatedly by bullies. Odd, very odd. Shai, I hope I don't exaggerate when I say bullies. A very good evening to you. What about the Columbia campus right now does the audience need to know? Could I go there? Can you go there? Is the Columbia campus open for people to walk through the 116th Street connection or to go to the Butler Library? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thank you for the introduction. I would say the one thing that I would caveat is that the turmoil at Columbia has not been happening in the past few weeks. It's been happening since October 12th. And it's been slowly building up. It got to a point that has become untenable in when the students violently took over a building. But it was, for people that have been following this since October, it was par for the course. It wasn't surprising as much as it was anticipated by us. And we're glad that the media has finally kind of picked it up and paid attention. But the university knew that this will happen eventually, and they chose to do nothing. But I definitely agree with your depiction of it as bullying. This is what bullies do. They force their views on the world through force and either actual violence or threats of violence, and they ruin it for most of us, most decent people that are nonviolent. So if the question is, can you come on campus? No, you cannot come on campus. And in fact, I can't go on campus either. Columbia's university has locked the gates for the past few weeks, completely segregating itself from the world and only allowing essential personnel to go on main campus.
Malcolm?
Can I ask you just generally, how is your perception of Columbia academic freedom and beyond just the events of after the horrific attack and the response to Columbia, generally how you view now these students to see these eruptions around the country, even though there's still a small percentage? Has your perspective about academic freedom, about academic life and life in general here changed?
Well, that's a great question. And my personal views about the importance of academic freedom have not changed at all. In fact, I would think it'd be weird for people to change their values, you know, over a period of weeks or months. What has changed is my perceptions of how things are being enforced at Columbia. And we basically see that academic freedom is, one, only given to certain views rather than all views, and two, it's being misused and I would say bastardized by activists who are guising themselves as professors, as academics, as intellectuals, but very in fact ideologues. So my concern is not that Columbia doesn't have enough academic freedom, but rather that it's enforcing its academic freedom rules in a very biased manner.
Columbia University now has a chance to repair the damage that's been done. This is a major university. It has lots of skill sets. Are they using it, Shai?
In two words or three words, they are not. I can tell you, I mean, I agree. They have the greatest minds. It's not a question of capability. It's a question of willingness. And I'll tell you an example. Earlier today, Ben Shafiq, the president of the university, sent out an email to the entire faculty. I've never received an email just for the faculty since joining Columbia in 2019. And she talks about the turmoil on campus. She talks about how we need to move forward and build trust and build together. Two words were not mentioned at all in her email: anti-Semitism and Jewish. Right? So it's almost like they meaning the administration, they don't want to even deal with the issue of the rampant anti-Semitism on campus and the concerns of the Jewish faculty, right? When you send an email to the entire faculty and you basically erase the identity of the faculty that are at question here, that are the ones that are, you know, that are really experiencing most of the burden, it's very peculiar at, you know, at best, and nefarious at worst.
Malcolm?
What do you think the impact will be longer term on Israeli academics, other academics, on the safety of Jewish students who don't even go to classes and can't, some of them have been locked in Columbia in their dorms for extended periods. What's the long-term implications and damage from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, there's many long-term implications. There's clear, difficult implications for the Jewish community on campus and other universities. But I think there's a bigger implication that affects every American, no matter what their faith or ethnicity or sexual orientation or whatever, which is the complete lack of distrust in academia, right? We're seeing now, what we're seeing is basically a symptom, and it's a symptom of an ideological purge that has been happening at Columbia and other universities for several decades, where you cannot have even one professor who teaches Zionism from a Zionist point of view. It has been completely purged. And I know that people from other issues in the United States, if it's climate change, if it's the cultural wars about race and gender and sexual orientation, all those things that I'm very, very liberal on. But I've noticed that there has been a purge of anyone who disagrees with me. And I actually think that is the worst, because we get smarter and stronger when we let rational but opposing views express themselves. It helps us become, you know, better thinkers and even more devout to our cause. But because there's been a complete purge of professors, students are only receiving a one-sided view, and it becomes no longer a higher education, but a higher indoctrination. And I think that's the biggest concern here.
My observation from the way outside, Shai, is that the young people, especially the undergraduates, have no understanding of what they're talking about, that they're chanting along in some kind of happy birthday fashion, and it's fashionable. Is that accurate, or are they well informed that they're cheering for killers?
Look, I think there's a mixture of people that don't know and people that don't care. And I think that's the right depiction. I think for many of the protesters believe they are doing good. Like, they really do wake up in the morning thinking this is the right thing to do. Again, it's a product of indoctrination. The difference, the concern that I have about the protesters not knowing is twofold. One is the refusal to learn. Right. One of the biggest tenets of all the protests we're seeing around the country is this idea of anti-normalization, which means you're not allowed to speak with someone with an opposing view, you know, namely a Jewish Zionist, because that normalizes us. So they don't want to learn. And the second thing is, when I don't know something, I don't go out and protest about it. I educate myself. And I think that's a very dangerous thing for democracy, when people are encouraged to shout out their views without first testing them, learning about them, informing themselves. I have no problem with someone who's really educated and then decides to go and support Hamas. I would find that, you know, very concerning from a moral perspective, from an ethical perspective of what that kind of person is. But at least they know what they're shouting about. At least they know the consequences of their actions. But when someone pretends that Hamas is one thing when it's actually another, that to me is a problematic.
Shai Davidai is an assistant professor, Management Division, Columbia Business School. Malcolm Hoenlein, I'm John Batchelor.